On December 20th, 2023, national polygamy advocate Mark Henkel shares the government subterfuge of anti-polygamy laws, the interim. Hello, friends, supporters, listeners, and sharers. 4 episodes ago of this podcast, episode number 297 of November 22, 2023, I shared the historic origins, the 4 steps that established the anti-polygamy laws in the latter half of the 1800s in the United States of America. Those 4 steps are as follows. First, the new Republican Party plank of 1856. Second, the Morrill Anti-Bigamy Act of 1862. Third, the Supreme Court decision of Reynolds v. United States in 1878. And fourth, the Edmonds Act of 1882. I concluded that episode by noting how many attentive listeners here are probably asking, "But Mark, how were the Congress and the Supreme Court able to get away with such anti-constitutional marriage control?" The following week, in episode number 298 of November 29, 2023, I shared the first of those 4 steps. Step 1, the new Republican Party plank of 1856. The week after that, in episode number 299 of December 6, 2023, I shared the second one, i.e., step 2, the Morrill Anti-Bigamy Act of 1862. Between step 2 and step 3, there is an extended period of time which I shall herein label as the interim. It is this period between Congress passing, along with President Lincoln signing, the Morrill Anti-Bigamy Act of 1862, and the later Supreme Court ruling on that law's constitutionality in the Supreme Court decision of Reynolds v. United States of 1878. In this episode here, episode number 301, on December 20, 2023, I will share about the interim of those 16 years between 1862 and 1878. By understanding this interim, we are better able to see the larger picture and context of the next step of the government subterfuge of anti-polygamy laws, i.e., the third of those 4 steps, step 3, the Supreme Court decision of Reynolds v. United States in 1878. Before I begin, however, I will first add a quick parenthetical note regarding the year of this Supreme Court decision. Myself, I have only ever known it to be from 1878. In recent years, I have observed that some new sources seem to suggest it was 1879. For example, while findlaw.com says it was 1878, another source, justia.com, says it was argued in the autumn of 1878, with the decision as asserted to have been published on January 6, 1879. By the way, what is it about January 6th as a date that has so much significance these days, eh? Today, though, I will not go down into that can of worms here. I will leave that to the Trumpers and anti-Trumpers of 2021 and forward to contemplate that. Anyway, as I have always ever referred to this Supreme Court decision as being in 1878, for my own consistency's sake, I will continue to do so unless or until it becomes a unanimous change of citations of 1879. But regardless of the year 1878 or the next, we have to look at what led up to that step 3, the Supreme Court decision of Reynolds v. United States. We saw that step 1, the new Republican Party plank of 1856, was the first formal calling of the government subterfuge of anti-polygamy laws. We then saw in step 2, the Morrill Anti-Bigamy Act of 1862, how the newly powerful New Republican Party, i.e., not the original Republican Party of Jefferson, Madison, and Monroe at the start of the 19th century, but the new Republicans elected Abraham Lincoln. Then, while America was distracted by fighting each other during the U.S. Civil War, the new Republican Party passed the Morrill Anti-Bigamy Act of 1862. During the Civil War, two additional states joined the Union, West Virginia and Nevada. Lincoln was re-elected in 1864 as a wartime president without the southern states voting, of course. After re-election, Lincoln was soon assassinated in that immediately next April 1865. Although his vice president, Andrew Johnson, was a pro-unionist, but not an actual Republican at heart, he succeeded Lincoln as president while the new Republicans controlled the Congress. The Civil War ended in 1866. The new Republicans began what is now known as Reconstruction, ratifying the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the U.S. Constitution between 1865 and 1870. In addition to abolishing all slavery and freeing the slaves, and also to guaranteeing African-American men the right to vote, it was in the third section of the 14th Amendment by which they declared that anyone who, quote, engaged in insurrection or rebellion, unquote, was not allowed to hold political office. Oh boy, here we go again about January 6th and the Trumpers versus anti-Trumpers, eh? Anyway, the southern states that had seceded were eventually readmitted into the Union again. But with that Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, the pro-slavery southerners could not bring slavery back, even through comeback representation. Anyway, Nebraska joined the Union as the 37th state during the Johnson presidency. The new Republicans decided instead to elect war hero Ulysses S. Grant as the next new Republican president from 1869 to 1877. Colorado became the 38th state. President Grant was succeeded by another new Republican, but only a one-term president, Rutherford Burchford Hayes, in the most contentious election of a president up to that date. Ironically, Democrats disputed the votes for Hayes from some southern states. The reason that that claim is so ironic is that there had been numerous and terrifying intimidations that kept many then-free African-American men afraid and away from the polls, who would have certainly voted for the anti-slavery New Republicans anyway. Eventually, New Republican President Rutherford Burchford Hayes, nicknamed as Rutherfraud by Democrat opponents, he took office in March 1877 with strong Democrat opposition in the Congress. Whew! That is a lot to digest about the interim. But wait, there's more! Through all this, a brand new religion, founded in the first quarter of the 19th century by a man in New York named Joseph Smith Jr., that new religion was invented. It was and is known as the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, a.k.a. the LDS, or more popularly known as the Mormons. And that's because of their then newly published would-be holy book called the Book of Mormon. The religion's inventor, being called the prophet of the new religion, added a compulsory polygamy dogma to the new religion. Note that I said compulsory, for indeed, the way Smith created the dogma, the application of polygamy was not a matter of free choice or consent. The new religion's other newly invented holy book, called Doctrines and Covenants, identified in particular passage as chapter 132 and supposed verse 54, or cited as D&C 132 verse 54, details how the supposed prophet's wife, Emma Smith, was coercively commanded to obey what we love not force pro-polygamists now oppose and would label as the horror of forced polygamy. all of which says to Emma Smith that, quote, if she will not abide this commandment, she shall be destroyed, unquote. Ugh. Those of us who support the modern concept of UCAP, UCAP, unrelated consenting adult polygamy, we retract in horror at such a compulsion by doctrine. Even opposing such a concept in general, for that matter. Additionally, Brigham Young also espoused an imaginative doctrine of pre-existence of souls. In his formal Journal of Discourses, chapter 17, titled The Family, in a section titled Birth Control, Brigham Young explained that, quote, it is the duty of every righteous man and woman, unquote, to have as many wives, to have as many children as possible, so that all those so-called pre-existing souls would be born into the righteous Mormons and not born to the rest of us. In that formal discourse, Brigham Young even explains, quote, this is the reason why the doctrine of plurality of wives was revealed, unquote. Well, the way that new Mormon religion compels polygamy might have been so revealed as he claims, but the fact, truth, and reality of polygamy in general is this. The new religion of Mormons of the 1800s did not invent or reveal polygamy. Indeed, polygamy goes all the way back to the book of Genesis in the Bible, written by polygamous Moses, who himself had two wives. But this new religion of Mormonism at that time was adding a compulsion through doctrine. Hence, not only did polygamy startle others in that time, but the far worse issue of force, as in forced polygamy, was even more anathema. Unfortunately, the issue of polygamy as a free choice was thereby and wrongly connected to the horrifying notion of what we now call forced polygamy. Consequently, many people were understandably hostile to that new religion, and they chased the followers of Mormonism away. The Mormons emigrated first to Illinois and then to Missouri, that latter location at which the founder, the so-called Prophet Joseph Smith Jr., was cruelly murdered by an anti-polygamy and actually anti-Mormon mob in 1844. As a result, a man named Brigham Young stepped into the leadership of the new religion as the next new so-called prophet. He led the followers of their new religion to Salt Lake City. They tried to set up a new state called Deseret, but instead established the territory of Utah. These events with the Mormons are the causational reasons why the New Republicans took up the issue of anti-polygamy in the first place, back in 1856 with their New Republican Party plank that year. And since these polygamous Mormon religious followers had fled to a territory, which was not a state, which was not subject to the limitation of the 10th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, the New Republicans knew that they could pass any jurisdictional management law as long as they used the words in the territories. And that is exactly what they did when legislating the Morrill Anti-Bigamy Act of 1862. Anyway, the followers of the new religion called Mormons generally kept to themselves in their territory way out in the West, all while the Civil War was being waged back east between the North and the South there. Later, though, with the Civil War done and out of the way, some of the new Republicans began to more actively focus their attention on that new religion out in the Utah Territory. The federal government asserted its jurisdictional management authority and dominance over the territory of Utah. Eventually, another Mormon man, one named George Reynolds, was convicted of violating the Morrill Anti-Bigamy Act of 1862, and he appealed all the way up to the Supreme Court. The so-called prophet Brigham Young died in August 1877. There you have it. All of that now brings us up to speed for the fall of 1878, when the U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments, and subsequently handed down their decision in the case of Reynolds v. United States of 1878. Now you know the interim. The interim between 1862 and 1878. The interim between an anti-polygamy law first passed and the Supreme Court affirming it, all by subterfuge. The interim between Step 2, the Morrill Anti-Bigamy Act of 1862, and Step 3, the Supreme Court decision of Reynolds v. United States of 1878. Now you know, and now you are prepared. The interim thus provides the context for now understanding the third step of the four steps of the government subterfuge of anti-polygamy laws in the second half of the 1800s in the United States of America. I will share more about that third step in an upcoming episode. Stay tuned. In the meantime, thank you for celebrating, supporting, listening to, and sharing the National Polygamy Advocate Podcast.
Mark Henkel is National Polygamy Advocate, presenting polygamy to the public since 1994. NationalPolygamyAdvocate.com.